Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. My name is Scott Winters, and I'll be your lay leader this morning, and my pronouns are he and him. And it's a delight to serve this warm and enthusiastic and welcoming congregation. We welcome you, no matter whether you are here in person or watching online or watching later on this week on our YouTube channel. You are welcome no matter who you are, whom you love, how you identify your gender, if you do. You are welcome no matter the amount of money that you have, employment status, or your housing situation. We affirm your spiritual practices, and we affirm if you choose not to have any as well. And you are welcome whether your heart is full of joy and gratitude for all the good things happening in your life, and you're also welcome if your heart is hurting, if you're in pain or grieving this morning as well. We welcome you into this beloved community of conscience and compassion. We especially want to welcome folks who are here for the very first time. We are so glad you're here, and we'd love to get to know you. And if you'd like to fill out one of our welcome forms, which you can use your phone to scan the code on the seat in front of you, you can fill that out and then receive our weekly email so that you can see about all the fun things that are happening here at WUF during the week. And there is a lot always happening. So this is a very active community, and please get involved as you feel comfortable. Today's service is being live streamed and recorded, and you're also welcome to watch the service downstairs in our fellowship hall in case you need more space, you know, to move around and just have perhaps some conversations during the service or something like that. For our online viewers, we have an online coffee hour following the service. And there should have been a link that was sent out this morning with the order of service. And for those of us here in person, we will have a coffee hour downstairs. And it's a great time to meet new folks, to talk about the service, and just share and all the good snacks and coffee that we have. Our minister, Tracy Springberry, is on sabbatical. And today our guest speaker is Reverend Julian Jamaica Soto. And they've been here before, and we are always so grateful when you can join us. Reverend Soto is a Unitarian Universalist minister and activist. They have worked in parish ministry, interim ministry, and hospital chaplaincy with veterans. Their belief in the principles of Unitarian Universalism, coupled with a commitment to collective liberalism and shared healing, informs their work in teaching, preaching, and art. Reverend Soto lives in the Pacific Northwest and seeks to serve the mission and values of Unitarian Universalism, along with the healing of the world. Please join me in welcoming Reverend Soto. If now, we will invite you to stand as you are able, and we'll be singing Come, Come, Whoever You Are, and Dan will be leading us this morning.
Thanks. It's a great round with a great message, and we'll sing it through once all together, and then twice I'll break you up.
Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again, come, come. Whoever you are, conqueror, worshiper, lover, and
beautiful. And if you want to remain standing, I now invite you to take a moment to greet each other and say good morning and enjoy a few moments. We welcome you to come back. Yes. So much good energy. I'd like to invite Nora, if Nora is ready, to come up and light our chalice. Our chalice lighting is written by Adam Slate. Adam is a candidate for UU Ministerial Fellowship, and it's titled, We Hold This Moment in Our Spirit. When the great mosaic of humanity is treated with respect and dignity, when no person is threatened by hunger or war, when we have extended hospitality to the stranger and tended to the sick, when equity and justice reign everywhere, then we shall all be free. We light this flame to hold that moment in our spirit and in our minds until we can make it real. Please join me in our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. Our opening reading is titled The Wellspring of Moral Action by Sharon Welch. The wellspring of decency is loving this life in which people die, people suffer, there are limits, and we make mistakes. The wellspring, then, of moral action is not utopia, not a counterfactual vision, not a declaration that the world could and should be otherwise. Rather, it is a deep affirmation of the joy, richness, and blessing that the world is. The ground of challenging exploitation, injustice, and oppression is not a vision of how the world could be or will be in the future reign of God or after the revolution. The ground of challenging injustice is gratitude, the heartfelt desire to honor the wonder of that which is, to cherish, to celebrate, to delight in the many gifts and joys of life. Let us now sing Spirit of Life. So grateful for Virginia signing for us for Spirit of Life and for Betsy who plays so faithfully for us. Thank you. This is the time in our service when we pause to think about what we're grateful for and the blessings and gifts that we've received from this earth, from each other, and from the spirit of this community. And I also want to add PGE this morning. We are very grateful for the electric company who was able to repair our power so quickly this morning, and that we can all be here, the comfort of this sanctuary. So our WOOF community, as you know, thrives because of the generous spirit of everybody around you. All the people that you see make this happen for all of us in beloved community, a place where everyone is welcome. And I'm reminded of those volunteers who recently helped with our painting project downstairs, and those who worked mindfully on the land where we gather, and those who volunteer every Sunday morning to help this service happen so that we can gather together, and the dozens and dozens of other essential duties that support this community on an ongoing basis. As Betsy plays our musical interlude, please consider for yourself how have you benefited from being here, and what you also have to offer our community, whether it be financial support, your time, your energy, your kindness, your ideas. Know that we all benefit from your open heart and generosity. The hosts may now come forward to collect our financial offerings. Thank you so very much for all of these gifts that you've offered today. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. And let us be grateful, Yara, that we share the gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And Izzy is now going to offer our time for all ages.
I'm Izzy, the Director of Religious Education here at WOF, and you can use whatever pronouns you want when you're referring to me. Today, our story is You Are Never Alone, by Ellen Kelsey. You are never alone. Every moment, this beautiful planet showers you with gifts. Clouds rain fresh water to quench your thirst. Your lungs swell with oxygen that plants create. Earthworms, ground beetles, ants plow the soil where your vegetables grow. Nature touches every bite you eat. You gobble fruits from plants pollinated by bats in the twilight and bees in the day. Ocean algae thickens the ice cream you lick. You devour fish who ate tiny plankton fertilized by poop from whales in the sea. When danger lurks, help comes in wild ways. Mangrove roots hold tight to slippery mudslides. Poplar trees drink up floods. Forests of undersea kelp calm ferocious waves. You are protected by a generous world of green. Branches stretch across streets, creating peaceful neighborhoods. Mother trees intertwine their roots, raising vast, shady forests that keep you and the planet cool. You always have company. armies of microorganisms snuggle against your skin, keeping germs at bay. Your face is home to wee little cleaning mites who evolved from the mites that lived on the faces of your ancestors. You grow strong with the help of bacteria that digest the food in your tummy. They were passed down from your parents when you were born. If things break, remember, healing happens too. Coral reefs rebuild just as your bones mend a fracture. Aloe vera soothes your itchy skin. Ginger settles your upset tummy. Wallowing in the mud makes you smarter. Thanks to a surge of feel-good chemicals triggered by the bacteria in the soil. You thrive through connections to the land and the sea. Whales rise and dive, splashing phytoplankton to the surface where the sun powers their growth. Krill gobble those ocean plants and become food for the salmon. Bears drag spawned salmon onto the shore, spreading fishy nutrients that help massive trees grow. Forests maintain the Earth's climate. More whales means more plants and fish and bears and a healthier you. You turn to your pets for support just as they count on you. Gaze into your dog's eyes and you both feel a rush of love. And just thinking about your cat soothes lonely times. You sense these wild connections. Sunshine fills you with hope. Your imagination smiles when you climb a tree. You are never alone. Feel gravity hug you tight as you twirl around the sun. We are never alone here at WWF either. We're all a community and part of our community building is the connections our kids make with each other and with the other adults in this congregation so that our community can thrive in the future as well. And one of the things that we do here at WWF is family camp. If you have young children and want to be a part of family camp, you can go to WWF.org and register there. If you have children or not and you want to be a part of helping our community of children grow, then you can contact me either after the service or via email. For donating your time, your money, or even toys, food, and things like that. So that's coming up on Labor Day, and we're getting pretty excited about that. Today, committee is also meeting to talk about our curriculum for next year, which will be completely nature-based and utilize our grounds here at WWF. Hopefully giving our kids a sense of stewardship over the land here and learning to build their own spiritual connections in nature. And that's all I have to say. So I don't know how to end that. But if you are able to, you can stand and help form archways across the walkways. We'll sing our children out.
As we settle into some contemplative time together, I invite you to take a deep breath right now and to let it go. And I invite you to reflect on these words by Laura Riordan Berardi. May we find love in this place, love in our hearts, love for the broken down, love for the lonely, love for those yet to feel whole, love for those in between. love for those out of our reach. May we find love, add love, and be love in this world. Amen. Let us now take a moment in this space together for reflection, meditation, or prayer, as is your practice. This is a time in our service as a time for us to gather and move into our hearts, into that place where we're feeling what we're joyful for and happy for in our lives. And also that place where we're feeling some sadness and some grief and some challenges in our life too. And oftentimes we can hold both at the same time. This ritual that we have here at WOOF is a way for us to express those things in a physical way, in community, and to be a witness to others of what's happening in our hearts and in our lives. And we have a bowl of water here that represents us, all of us together, no one excluded, who is here to support each other and to hear and to listen and to bear witness to each other. And we have stones that represent whatever is on your heart, whether that be a joy or a sorrow, or whatever it needs to be, these stones represent that for you. And so when Betsy begins to play, I invite you to come forward and place a stone or more into the water. And I'll have the microphone here as well if you'd like to share something briefly about what you're placing the stone in the water about. And always appreciate your gifts that you share.
This is the largest stone I can find, and it's in celebration of what feels like the return of hope and joy.
Yay!
I'm just so thankful for the inspiration of the Olympics.
Of some losses.
This is for the dying people at Hopewell House that I get to see every time I volunteer there. And they teach me so much about living because their focus is on living the last few weeks of their lives. We all could benefit from their examples.
And this last stone is for all of the unspoken that remains in our heart, in that place that is hidden, in that place that we keep private, and want to honor all of those as well. And we'll now sing From You I Receive. Number 402.
From you I receive, to you I give, together we share, and from this we live. From you I receive, to you I give, together we share, and from this we live.
This is a reading by Pema Chodron, Buddhist nun and well-known author and speaker, from her book Comfortable with Uncertainty. One of the classic Buddhist teachings on hope and fear concerns what are known as the eight worldly dharmas. These are four pairs of opposites, four things that we like and become attached to, and four things that we don't like and try to avoid. The basic message is that when we are caught up in the eight worldly dharmas, we suffer. First, we like pleasure. We are attached to it. Conversely, we don't like pain. Second, we like and are attached to praise. We try to avoid criticism and blame. Third, we like and are attached to fame. We dislike and try to avoid disgrace. Finally, we are attached to gain, to getting what we want. We don't like losing what we have. According to this very simple teaching, becoming immersed in these four pairs of opposites, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and disgrace, and gain and loss, is what keeps us stuck in the pain of samsara. We might feel that somehow we should try to eradicate these feelings of pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disgrace. A more practical approach is to get to know them more intimately. See how they hook us. See how they color our perception of reality. See how they aren't all that solid. Then the eight worldly dharmas become the means for growing wiser, as well as kinder and more content.
Well, good morning. I'm really grateful to be here with you today. Will you join me in a moment of prayer and meditation? As we gather today, the trees breathe all around us. Our hearts carry multiple things, many opposites, questions, concerns, and cares. But we are together, and together we are stronger. For these things we are grateful and say, Amen. Afro-Caribbean professor, writer, and activist M. Jackie Alexander, in her book, Pedagogies of Crossing, Meditations on Feminism, Sexual Politics, Memory, and the Sacred, reminds us this way. In order to become communities of people of liberation and wholeness, we would need to become fluent in each other's histories. To resist and unlearn an impulse to claim first oppression, most devastating oppression. We would have to unlearn an impulse that allows mythologies about each other to replace knowing about one another. We would need to cultivate a way of knowing in which we direct our social, cultural, psychic, and spiritually marked attention on each other. We would need to cultivate a way of giving each other this attention. We cannot afford to cease yearning for each other's company. There is a lot of research about burnout. Have you felt burnt out any time in the recent past? One of the reasons we humans get burnt out is that we find ourselves in a position in which we perceive that we can improve nothing. If you can't improve anything, you can see how that would lead to feeling kind of burnt, and especially burnt out. Where are you supposed to replenish your strength if you feel that there's nothing you can do? Today I'm going to talk about some ways that the powers that you already have and cultivate can feed the fire that you need to tend, can strengthen your hope. That's the good news. The other news, it's not necessarily bad news, it's just frank news today, is that it's about work. Are you ready? All right. That's honest. That's so honest. Sometimes people say, sure, Reverend Soto, that's great. I'd love to be anti-racist. The thing is, I'm not exactly sure how. Right? One of the complications in Unitarian Universalism is that if you're hanging around mostly white people, you're not going to exercise cross-cultural muscles that much. Right? I'm not blaming you for that. I'm not shaming you for that. I'm telling you the truth. And you can see it with your own perception. Okay, so real quick, right out the gate, I'm going to give you a super bonus tip, which is sometimes we get lax. If you were using your very best manners, your very best ones, even though we don't always agree what manners is, right? We don't. That's okay. But if you're using your very best manners, you're going to miss a lot of problems. So if you feel like you don't know what to do, and you think of manners as treating people really well, that's going to help you. So that's the first thing I'm going to tell you for your work. All right. So we said, sure, we want to be anti-racist, but what does that even mean? This is a super practical point. So one of the things I'm going to tell you today is that curiosity is a tool in the creation of equity and connection. Curiosity is also the way by which we can bring some of our dearest values into reality as we do the work of community powered by the practice of covenant. If there's anything that you can get your brain around, your hands around, your work upon, it is the practice of covenant. Today I want to share a story for adults, which I say specifically to describe the intensity and seriousness. It's the story of Amanda America Dixon. In this service, it's another introduction. Amanda invites us to be curious about something from a fresh perspective. The reason that curiosity is a helpful tool for creating equity is that being curious exists in tension with having, knowing, or approaching things as though you already know all the answers to all the questions you might have. I know, on one hand you're thinking, I don't think I know everything. But that's not the flavor. The flavor is, listen, I've already been there. I've already done that. And already being there and already knowing and already having a listening that says, ah, this is old stuff. That's the opposite of being curious. You can hear that, right? So, let's talk about it. Amanda America Dixon was an African-American socialite in Georgia. She became one of the wealthiest African-American women of the 19th century after inheriting a large estate from her father. The beginning of her story includes a mention of sexual violence. Born into slavery, Amanda America was the child of David Dixon, a white planter, and Julia Frances Lewis Dixon, a young enslaved woman who was 13 at the time her daughter was born. David Dixon was about 20 years old at that time. Amanda was raised by Elizabeth Shoulders Dixon, her white grandmother and legal mistress. She was educated and schooled in the social skills of her father's class, and he helped her to enjoy a life of privilege away from the harsh realities of slavery before emancipation. This was the first time Dixon had experienced a situation like it, following the Civil War. In her late 20s, Dixon even attended the Normal School of Atlanta University, a historically black college from 1876 to 1878. It had the similar effect of privilege of attending college today. One of the opportunities for curiosity in the story of Amanda America is the consideration of the spaces between enslavement and freedom. Oppression in general and racism in specific happen in dozens of ways, not just slave or free, racist or anti-racist. There is more. Committing to a practice of curiosity helps us to be able to distinguish shades of nuance. Here, Amanda America, with a white father and a black mother, is described in her story both as white and as mixed race. And this experience of one and both and neither is an experience that is widely represented in our contemporary society and in this community. The parallel question for dominant culture folks is this: what are the shades of nuance to being an anti-racist? For people who have been taught that being anti-racist is equal to not giving offense, the absence of what they imagine to be harmful actions may give them the sense of being blameless. But the absence of something doesn't prove the presence of something else. The absence of overt, hateful actions, which may range from accidental unwelcome to using racial slurs to joining militant racist organizations, the absence of those does not prove the presence of fairness or justice. Instead, not joining that, not doing that, is the bare minimum of how we must show up to be decent people. Beyond the idea that the main task of the anti-racist is to avoid offense, but staying curious, people can make positive contributions to collective freedom, mutual respect for one another, and shared understandings of joy. Curiosity allows us to create more experiences of belonging and mutual understanding with one another because we lean in, going past what we already know, we always talk about, or always assume, to the specific facts of the people with whom we journey. We lean in to adjust the imbalances of fairness. After her father's death in 1885, Amanda America inherited his estate. His white relatives challenged the will, but ultimately she won a successful ruling in the case. The Dixon estate included 17,000 acres of land in Hancock and Washington counties in Georgia. Amanda America married twice. Her first husband was white, while her second husband was wealthy, educated, and mixed race. And even though it's interesting, Amanda America's inheritance isn't important because she became wealthy. It's not even important because she won her case. Rather, the reason she won her case is the factor that changed everything for black and mixed race folks in America. People will tell you that Unitarian Universalism isn't racist. It's probably not if you're a white person experiencing it in a white context. And here lies the way in which people want to describe our society as fractured, as at war. Talking about divisions in this way is an evasion of our respective and communal responsibilities to one another. It's not as though our differing social locations, skin color, the nature of our varying abilities, are things we don't know about each other. Right? I know in my group of people who is absolutely allergic to gluten, who can't walk a mile without stopping, who needs amplification to hear well. Right? Those are things I know. Why? Because I know the people. You know that about each other. You can learn that about people who come to you. The dominant culture folks in this community, in all these moments and many others, have the opportunity to show up as an ally. Yes. But also as two key items in the growth of community, generally balanced. One is purpose, and the other is motive. So we have a chance to love the world and to heal it. But you don't do the work of healing as a punishment or obligation. That's not the point. When we talk about anti-racism, it's not because you're bad and you need to be fixed. But you've heard people talk about it that way, right? Oh, why do we have to talk about this? Oh, I'm always getting in trouble because... No, that's not why we talk about it. Why we talk about it is another possibility. Are you curious about it? Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh reminds us that if you love someone, the greatest gift you can give them is your presence. It is by being present with one another that we become fluent in each other's histories. How do you become fluent in the history of another person? Sociologists have identified the ingredients that need to be in place for us to make friends organically. Are you ready for the science? There are two things: continuous unplanned interaction and shared vulnerability. How do these show up in congregational life? One way is the high value of free-flowing conversation. That's something Unitarian Universalists place a high value on. Don't structure my every moment. Let me spend time with my people. But we can think of more ways as well. Vulnerability appears through practices of ritual and sharing. Different practices offer different opportunities to unarm our spirits and journey together. We need to cultivate a knowing in which we direct our attention on each other. Science confirms this thought. Research shows that making a casual friend takes 50 hours on average. While close friendships, do you want to take a guess? How many hours does it take to make a close friend? It takes 200 hours, which is a lot of hours. Adults with jobs, kids, and a collection of other responsibilities also simply have less time available to invest those hours. Not only will being curious with one another prevent been there, done that, encounters with people, coming from curiosity is a powerful tool for anti-racism. Being curious also clarifies the ways in which you can contribute to the fulfillment of the mission of your congregation. I looked it up. Can you tell it to me? You want me to read it to you? Ooh. I'm getting it. Together, we plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, bloom with service to the wider world. That's beautiful, y'all. That's amazing. Are you doing that? You're trying. I love it. Yeah, that's great. So that's what we're talking about. When we're talking about being curious, one of the things you're bringing to that is this mission, this saying, like, this is who we are in the world. Let's figure it out. Question mark. We are going into more uncharted water. What does uncharted water mean? Uncharted water means there's no map. And you're driving the boat. And let's go. So you have a little bit of direction in your mission. Excuse me. You You have curiosity to take you where you need to go. And that's the work. Curiosity is the perspective that allows something new to take place. And befriending is the action that creates an experience of invitation and belonging. What for, though? Is it really that important? When David Dixon died suddenly on February 18, 1885, Amanda America Dixon inherited the majority of his land and wealth. His wealth left his estate to her sound judgment. His will left her his estate to her sound judgment and unlimited discretion, and prohibited interference from anyone, including any husband she might have. In what became known as the David Dixon will case, 79 white relatives of David Dixon disputed the will in court, mainly arguing that David Dixon was not of a sound mind when he wrote the will, that he was unduly influenced by Amanda America and Julia Dixon, and that she was probably not even his child. Here I'll add that he raised her lovingly and knowingly, so that additional piece is pretty much a lot. The same year, the will was approved by the probate court, and then a trial happened in county court. Later that year, Amanda America won the court case. A bit of spooky lore about this case. On October 11th, 1886, Chief Justice James Jackson, and Associates Samuel Hall and Mark Blanford heard the case following the appeal. James Jackson expressed the firm conviction upholding the will, saying, "I would rather die in my place than uphold the will." A few days later, he became ill with pneumonia and died. Her name is Amanda America. The connection to real life is this. The 79 people who contested Amanda America's inheritance thought they could do so, specifically because she was black and mixed race. On your way to fulfilling your mission as a congregation, you will also have challenges. To these challenges, you bring the tools of a curious perspective, a practice of befriending, and a third point of strength for your practice as community. It is your congregational covenant. One of the things at stake in your practice is your connection with one another and the yearning for each other's company, that what's at stake is the ability to fulfill your vision. So you could take it or leave it, sure. But if you do that, you will miss out on everything that your promises hold. To build a radically inclusive community, to grow the beloved community by expanding the welcome table, and deepening our commitments to countering oppression as an intentional, multiracial, multicultural, multigenerational congregation, what if you deliver on that by staying curious? By your commitment to covenant, you may create that imperfect but functional community. Without covenant, you will have removed the catalytic converter and sold it for some hot Cheetos or something. Might taste good for a little bit, but in the end, it will not make you stronger, and instead will weaken you. Kathy McGowan offers these ideas about covenant. If you are truly willing to live a life of reverence and respect beyond yourself, then you can have a covenantal life. If you strive to have healthy relationships and intentionally attend to them, you know when you are out of covenant. You know when something is wrong, when something is broken, when you are out of right relationship. It is up to each one of us to pay attention to these most sacred bonds and to do our part in aiding to heal any of the brokenness. Let's talk about the past few years. The past few years of pandemic have reminded us how important spending time together actually is. But more is possible when it comes to spiritual and ethical community than companionable silence. Relying on one another to keep our word and make amends when we break our word is how we arrive to the conclusions of our covenant. In caring for each other and ourselves, we intend to build a beloved community. Covenantal practice is not only the core of Unitarian Universalism, it is the means by which you can add strength and health to your community. That is, it will take the tool of curiosity, the practice of befriending, and the backbone of covenantal practice. The willingness to return to one another and mutual promises when covenant is broken. To collect enough fuel to power our collective freedom. There are at least a couple of ways you can live with the covenant. We can make it real and living among us, or you can put it somewhere. A decoration, like a souvenir spoon that you get at a gift shop. Probably not ever going to eat anything with it. I wonder if calling our covenant aspirational makes us more likely to engage with it as decorative. This is an open-ended question with more than one answer. Finding the answer is part of the congregation's work and part of its integrity. 8 months after the appeal of the David Dixon will, the Supreme Court of Georgia also ruled in favor of Amanda America and her two sons, formally settling the dispute. Here's the reason why the case is important and why Amanda America won. Citing the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the Georgia Supreme Court affirmed the lower court's decision, saying that the rights and privileges of a black woman and her children would be the same as the rights and privileges of a white unmarried partner or an unmarried white woman with children born outside of a legality. So, the same laws govern rights and privileges of women of both races. It was a mixed-race woman who had the tenacity to fight and win an incredibly complex and litigious will contest by which she was able to establish equal protection under the law for black and white women, a legacy of freedom that remains today. The story of Amanda America reminds us that the established notion of how we talk about race lacks curiosity. It pays little attention to nuance. It asks you to suppose that in our lives, race only looks like black and white. We know that black lives matter. Absolutely they do. And setting about to diminish that notion is rooted in anti-blackness and the practice of white supremacy. The strength of shared promises, the perspective of curiosity, the practice of befriending, we can add to that story. We can close today with words from Clara Ma. We gratefully receive these, as she says, "We have become explorers and also scientists. We will never know everything there is to know, but with our burning curiosity, we have learned so much. So may we live."
Thank you, Reverend Soto. Dan, would you like to lead us in our closing hymn?
Sure. Please stand as you're willing and able, and we'll sing 134, Our World is One World. So. Our world is one world. What touches one affects us all. The seas that wash us round about, the clouds that cover us, the rains that fall. Our world is one. The thoughts we think affect us all. The way we build our attitudes with love or hate we make, a bridge or wall.
is one world. Its ways of wealth affect us all. The way we spend, the way we share, who are the rich or poor, who stand or fall. Our world is one world, just like a ship that bears us all, where fear and greed make many holes, but where our hearts can hear a different call.
Beautiful. Thank you. Our benediction today is by Emily Richards, the Director of Religious Exploration at the First Unitarian Church of Ithaca, New York. May you leave this time together changed. May the promises you have made to yourself about who you want to be feel closer to the reality of who you are right now. May you share that feeling of transformation wherever you go. May it spread into every word, deed, thought, and interaction, until we are all changed, transformed, and transforming together, becoming our better selves. So I extinguish our flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again. Let us now turn and face each other as we sing Carry the Flame. Carry.